So I want to explain two well-known phenomena, color confinement in the large gauge theory, and Bose-Einstein condensation. They are actually the same. I want to claim that they are actually the same thing. And this picture can be very useful for understanding holographic emergent space, I think. And this talk is based on correspondence between color confinement of Bose-Einstein condensation is explained in a paper which appeared this evening in HEPTH. And there are various recent related papers. And in order to explain the correspondence between or equivalence between color confinement and Bose-Einstein condensation, first we have to introduce several tools. And I want to have to explain partial deconfinement or equivalent to partial confinement in SU N-gauge theory. The meaning will become clear in the next slide. And I want to explain this already has interesting consequence to gravity via holography. Like a Schwarzschild black hole has to have a negative space kit, but that can be explained by partial deconfinement. And then we can explain confinement and relation between confinement and Bose-Einstein condensation. And in the first part, I introduced this notion at weak coupling. But once we understand this equivalence, we can easily generalize it to strong coupling as well. And as a characterization of confinement and the deconfinement, I want to use the dependence of energy or entropy with n. Okay, so in confinement phase, you cannot see individual colors. Okay, there are n colors, but you cannot see them in, separately. And energy or entropy is typically n to the zero or the one. And in deconfined phase, n squared color degrees of freedom of gluon or n color degrees of freedom of quark can be seen. That would mean energy or entropy becomes n squared. So here, to describe a confined phase, I used blue color to say that it's very cold. You know, no degrees of freedom is excited, it's very cold. And in the confined phase, all degrees of freedom are excited, it's very hot, so I used red. And this deconfinement phase is dual to black hole in the standard holographic dictionary. And this is rather kinematical characterization of confinement and deconfinement, and it can work even at weak coupling or small volume. And if you go to strong coupling, large volume, this characterization is related to more traditional dynamical characterization. For example, based on potential between two probe quarks. You know, linear potential appears in confining phase. Okay? And okay, so now I say that if energy or entropy is order one, it's confinement phase. If energy or entropy is order n squared, it's the confining phase. So let me ask a very simple question. What if energy is like n squared over 100? It's still order n squared, so it cannot be in confinement phase. But you don't have big enough energy to go to the confined phase. And I want to convince you that the answer is partial deconfinement. So if this small block is deconfined, it can explain the energy precisely. And this, you know, here I said what if energy is n squared over 100. But we can take even smaller energy or much bigger energy. Okay, so if we change energy from a small value to large value, like n squared times small value to n squared, we expect this pattern. So when energy is, say, n squared times 10 to the minus 10, only really small block can be deconfined. But as energy goes up, this deconfined block grows, and eventually completely fill. All n squared color degrees of freedom are deconfined. And I said that deconfined phase is dual to black hole, and the confined phase is typically interpreted as an ADS vacuum. Then, of course, the natural interpretation of such partially deconfined, partially confined phase is that there is a small black hole sitting at the center of ADS. And the confinement sector would correspond to exterior of the black hole. And I want to convince you that this picture is correct. But before giving a more precise argument, let's just think heuristic justification. Actually, we can almost trivially understand this has to be the case. And so I will show you three possible objections to that picture. And I will make counter argument for each of them. And the first objection, which I often get, is why some color degrees of freedom has to deconfine? Why doesn't a part of the spatial volume goes to completely deconfined phase, the rest of the space remain in confined, you know, state? Like if you have water at zero temperature, you can see the coexistence of, you know, ice and liquid water. And part of the volume is ice, part of the volume is liquid. And why don't we see such, you know, coexistence in the case of deconfinement and confinement phase? And the answer is very simple. So firstly, sometimes it can happen. But in general, deconfinement, which is characterized by the jump of energy from order 1 to n squared, that can happen even at small volume or even in matrix model. If you imagine matrix model, there is no space. So such separation in a space is impossible because there is no space. So we need some mechanism which is valid even in that case. So this cannot be a generic mechanism. And it will turn out there is an exception, and if phase transition is of first order and the spatial volume is big enough, this kind of coexistence, usual coexistence of two phases in space is possible. But it's not generically the case. For example, in QCD, this is not the case. And the second objection would be, why don't all n squared degrees of freedom are gently deconfined? So I used to pink in order to say, it's not as cold as blue, but not as hot as red. And why you know, such a small block has to be deconfined? And the objection to this counter argument is very simple. And suppose we take a weak coupling limit, okay? And then we have n squared harmonic oscillators. And each harmonic oscillator has to stay in ground state or excited at least one unit because it's quantum mechanics. So we cannot have a parametrically small, mild excitation in quantum mechanics, so we cannot have such phase. So it cannot be the case, but this is still allowed. And the third and final objection is that why should we expect such large symmetry instead of a no symmetry situation? And intuitively, simple explanation is that we're talking about large n theory. So to determine typical configuration, we have to solve some minimization problem, maximization of entropy or minimization of free energy, and have to find some saddle point. And it is natural to expect large symmetry at saddle point typically. So this looks more natural than this. And actually, when we understand the equivalence between confinement and Bose-Einstein condensation, this picture will justify this in a very, with a very simple logic. So I hope to some extent you think this, you know, partial deconfinement is not a crazy idea. It's a rather natural idea. And before giving actual proof for simple cases, let me mention a little bit more about the phase diagram. And there are a few keywords: Hagedorn transition, gross Wittgenbach transition, and quote-unquote gauge symmetry breaking. Basically, there are three possible phase diagrams. There are three patterns. So here, I plotted the energy or Polyakov loop as a function of temperature. And in this blue line is completely confined phase. So M is the size of the confined block. So here M is zero. Red means completely the confined phase. M is N. And we must have an intermediate phase, which is partially the confined. And it's very analogous to usual coexistence of two phases at the first order phase transition of liquid and gas or liquid and solid. So in the case of water and ice, at low temperature, we have a solid phase. All the degrees of freedom are solid. And at high temperature, it's liquid. But in between, at zero Celsius, at one atom at zero Celsius, we can have a mixture of ice and water, liquid water. Part of the volume can be solid, part of the volume can be liquid. And the important thing is, in that case, temperature doesn't change. When we change the energy, just the ratio changes. But the reason that temperature doesn't change here is interaction is local. In the color space, we can have a coexistence of deconfined block and confined block. But the color space or internal space is highly non-local because all color can interact with all colors. So even when M changes, actually temperature can change. And we see such examples. And there are basically three patterns. So this is the easiest to understand. I think it's just the same as this case. Temperature doesn't change when the size of the confined block changes. Or we can have negative space heat, which leads to hysteresis. Or we can have a positive space heat, which is rather normal situation. And we will see that this is like QCD. This is like free EMLs, and this is strongly coupled EMLs. And if we assume this picture, here when M becomes non-zero, it's the confinement transition. But we need one more phase transition here where M reaches N. And actually there is a, here, and there is a good candidate of such phase transition, which is a Gross-Witten-Wadier phase transition. And traditionally, it's characterized by distribution of a Polyakov-Rhine phase. So Polyakov loop is a product of exponential of temporal gauge field along path ordering along a temporal circle. And in the SUN theory, Polyakov loop is determined by average of n phases. And when n is infinite, we can have a continuous distribution. And in confined phase, Polyakov loop is zero, and the phase distribution is just uniform. And in deconfined phase, they are not uniform. But still, there are two patterns. Everywhere non-zero, or gap appears here. And the Gross-Witten-Wadier phase transition is phase transition between these two deconfined phases. And it will be interpreted as partially the confined phase. This will be understood as a completely the confined phase. So I'm claiming that transition here is Gross-Witten-Wadier phase transition. Partial the confinement to complete the confinement. And there is one more phase transition here. And this, if you know string theory, it corresponds to Hagedorn transition. And so there are two phase transitions. First phase transition is here. This is the Hagedorn transition, or confinement to partial the confinement. And in string theory terminology, black hole formation starts here. And if we increase energy at some point, all the matrix degrees of freedom deconfine, and there is a second phase transition, partial deconfinement to complete deconfinement. And in some sense, you can say this is the end of black hole formation. Black hole becomes as big as ADS. And the interesting aspect here is, apparently, if SUN deconfines, in between, SUN symmetry is quote-unquote broken to SUM plus SUN minus M. And this M changes from N to N, 0 to N, and in completely confined and completely deconfined phase, we have SUN. But in between, gauge symmetry is broken. I will make the meaning of the broken more precisely later. And already to QCD, this has an interesting consequence. In QCD, we have a fundamental quark, then there's no center symmetry. And if quark is massless, there is chiral symmetry, but quark is massive. So in QCD, there is no symmetry which characterizes deconfinement. There's, people believe that the deconfinement transition is not associated with any symmetry breaking or restoration or whatever. But I'm claiming here that there is gauge symmetry. Gauge symmetry breaks and then gets restored. And the gauge symmetry is always there, whether you have a fundamental quark or whether you have mass of the quark, it doesn't matter. So this idea applies at least to large N QCD. And I think it can work for SU3 and large volume though I don't have a precise proof. Okay, so this idea is already interesting for QCD, I think. And so I just gave words without explaining the actual calculation. So I want to show some explicit calculation. And first I want to start with the weakly coupled theory. And to do that, we need some more understanding about the physics behind it. And first of all, let me give you some working hypothesis, which will turn out to be correct. But let me give a heuristic derivation of a very important working hypothesis. So if we think Yamil theory, regard Yamil theory as a system of effective theory of Dbrand string, this SUM deconfined sector of SUN theory would be that out of n dbrands, m of dbrands are forming bound state. You know, strings are excited between m dbrands and they are forming black hole. And if we want to see free energy or entropy or energy of this block, suppose that this the confined degrees of freedom are not playing important role. So we just truncate SUN theory to SUM theory and assume that the same answer is obtained. And this is true for many theories, and there are several exceptions, but I will not talk about those exceptions today. And suppose this is correct. Then, firstly, I say that when energy goes up, at some the confined block grows, and then beyond n, it cannot grow anymore. But if we imagine, if we take SUN prime theory, where n prime is smaller than n, unless m reaches m prime, we cannot tell the difference between SUN theory and SUN prime theory, as long as we are looking at the entropy, or as long as we are looking at the property of the confined block. However, in SUN prime theory, m cannot grow beyond this point. But in SUN theory, m can still grow all the way up to n. This is a simple assumption, I think. Then that would mean this is non-trivial part. So this point was a transition point in SUN theory. But if we want to say partial deconfined phase here, this is transition point in SUN prime theory. And we can just take a different gauge group as well, SU n double prime or triple n triple prime. And if we see how this transition point changes when we change the size of gauge group, we can see how this intermediate phase depends on temperature or energy. So the problem we have to solve is we have to determine the transition point of SUN theory, and we change m. And this is rather simple problem. Okay, so we want to identify this gross Witten-Wadier phase transition in SUN theory. And there are three basic patterns, you know, Poliakoff loop as a function of the temperature. First order phase transition with hysteresis, without hysteresis, and in this case, typically second order and the third order phase transition appear. And this part, okay, separating orange part and the red part, completely deconfined and partially deconfined, is gross Witten-Wadier phase transition. And in many weakly coupled theories, there are exceptions, but in many cases, we can show that phase distribution in this orange part, distribution of the phase of a Poliakoff loop, is written as a linear combination of a phase distribution of a confining phase and the deconfined phase, or gross Witten-Wadier point here. And if we identify Poliakoff loop with m over 2n, everything becomes consistent. So here, m of n phases are in the confined phase. N minus m of the phases are in confined phase. And so we should see this superposition. And this is just the first part of the check. Okay, so here in many weakly coupled theories, I say that this point corresponds to p equals 1 half. And I say that if we take p to be m over 2n at this point corresponds to SUM deconfined phase. And if that is true, then if we calculate the energy and entropy at this point, we should get energy and entropy of SUM theory at the transition point. This is one non-trivial check. And in all theories we have studied, we can actually see this. And I will give you one actual example, okay? And the simplest example is a very stupid example, but this is a very instructive example. This is gauged Gaussian matrix model. And we just have two SUN matrix, and this is just free. Without a gauge singlet constraint, this is just a bunch of harmonic oscillators. But with gauge singlet constraint, this theory demonstrates confinement, deconfinement phase transition. And this is the simplest model of a black hole. So from X and its momentum conjugate, we can make a creation and annihilation operator. Let's call it them A dagger and A. And from Y, we can make B dagger and B. And physical state is obtained by acting creation operators to Fock vacuum, but we have to impose a gauge singlet constraint. So we can make such a gauge singlet state by taking trace of a product of creation operators acting on Fock vacuum. And this is free theory. So energy is just a number of harmonic oscillators. Energy is L, up to 0.2 energy. And to estimate entropy, we have to count the number of states. But when you know this L is not too long, all the single trace operators are independent. And we can show that most of them are independent. And then we can say for the first part, we could, here I used A dagger, but we could use A dagger or B dagger. For the second one, we could use A dagger or B dagger. And so we have 2 to the L different ordering. So number of state is roughly 2 to the L, and we take log and get entropy equals to L times log 2 in this case. If it's 3 matrix model, this becomes log 3. You know, it's very simple. And this estimate is correct as long as L is much smaller than N squared. And then free energy is energy minus temperature times entropy. And this is the length of the trace times 1 minus t log 2. And when t is smaller than log 2, if L becomes large, free energy becomes large. So string doesn't want to become long. But when t reaches log 2, even if L becomes large, free energy doesn't change. So string suddenly becomes longer. And this analysis is valid only when L is smaller than N squared. And if we do more better analysis, we can see when this growth ends. And we can write such a phase diagram. So Polyakov loop, or entropy, or energy jumps at this critical temperature. And with this identification, Polyakov loop equals to M over 2N, we can see that M of the Polyakov line phase is in deconfined phase, and the rest is in confined phase. Looks good. And up to 0.2 energy, actually energy with this identification is M squared over 4, which is just a transition point of SUM theory. And entropy also scales like this, and this is just a transition point of SUM theory. And this is just a consistency check. I just said SUM theory can explain entropy and energy precisely. But apparently, in this argument, if we imagine such, such partially confined phase, where is gauge symmetry? Gauge singlet constraint is not here, there, So we have to understand partial deconfinement in gauge invariant manner. And we can do it in a rather simple manner. So first, forget about SUN invariance. and separate n by n matrix to m by n block, which is denoted by a prime b prime, and the remaining part, which we use a double prime and b double prime. And let's make a SUM singlet state acting a trace of a product of a prime and b prime. And we can, by using such a state, we can precisely explain energy and entropy of SU when at p equals to m over 2n. But of course, this is not a gauge singlet, not a SUN singlet. But then we have very simple one-to-one mapping from non-SUN singlet state to SUN singlet state. So we just act all possible gauge transformation to this state and take a linear superposition. Then this is such a state is SUM deconfined in the sense this is a linear combination of such SUM deconfined matrices. And such a state precisely explain all states. Because the entropy counted by using such state could explain all degrees of freedom needed to explain thermodynamics. And there is one-to-one mapping. So such a state has to be dominating thermodynamics. And so those states explain the entropy precisely, and no other state can contribute to thermodynamics. So in the intermediate phase between Hagedorn transition and between Hagedorn transition and the Gross-Whitney-Wadia transition, such partial deconfinement phase, partially deconfined, partially confined state dominates thermodynamics. This is the proof in this simplest weakly interacting theory. And then, given this mapping, it's easy to understand what I meant by spontaneous gauge symmetry breaking. So we have SUN invariant state, but this was just a sum of non-SUN invariant state. And if we are thinking of, if we have a theory at infinite volume, okay, we have to specify the boundary condition, how, which embedding of SUM to SUN is realized as a boundary condition. We have to specify that. It's just the same as a usual Higgs mechanism. In a Higgs mechanism, Higgs field could have any phase, but you have to specify boundary condition. In that way, global part of gauge symmetry breaks spontaneously. It's just the same as a Higgs mechanism or color flavor locking or all sorts of gauge symmetry breaking. It's just the same thing. And local part of gauge symmetry cannot really break. This is Editor's theorem. But if we fix the gauge in such a way that this embedding is realized, physics become very transparent. This is exactly what people are doing for Higgs mechanism or color flavor locking. In Higgs mechanism, global part is spontaneously broken, and local part is explicitly broken by gauge fixing condition. And in one of the papers in the Wilczek, he was saying that gauge symmetry breaking, in this sense, introduces useful fiction. So local part can never be broken, but imagining that it's broken, physics become very simple. And the global part is actually broken. And what is happening here is exactly the same. So again, I want to show this wonderful picture. So there are two phase transitions, confinement to partial deconfinement, and partial deconfinement to complete deconfinement. And in between, gauge symmetry is spontaneously broken in the sense I have explained. And this characterization applies to QCD, at least to large N QCD. And if we consider QCD, so if we introduce fundamental quarks, then we can still study weak coupling limit on three sphere, and we get to this kind of phase diagram. So complete deconfinement is achieved at exact zero temperature, and there is a wide range of partially deconfined phase, and then complete deconfinement is achieved at some point. And this has, this kind of partial deconfinement has an interesting consequence in the context of holography. And the original motivation that I studied such partial deconfinement, or we found partial deconfinement, I did it with Jonathan Maltz in 2016, is that we wanted to understand the phase diagram of 4D super MLs on 3-sphere, which is the R2 black hole in ADS5 cross S5. So this is a phase diagram at a strong coupling region of 4D super MLs, predicted by assuming gauge gravity duality is correct. So based on gravity calculation, such phase diagram is obtained. So Earth, when energy is very small, we have a sparse graviton gas. And at some point, Hagedorn growth sets in, and free stream is a good picture. But then, at some point, a lot of energy and entropy is packed in a small region. So small black hole is a good description. And the ADS is like a box. Okay? And we have a 10-dimensional box, ADS5 cross S5. But when black hole is very small, it's almost like a non-compact space. So we can use 10-dimensional black hole solution in a with asymptotically flat space as a good approximation. Then energy is 1 over g newton, which is n squared, times t to the minus 7. But then eventually this black hole becomes as big as the box or ADS, and then property changes and we get the large ADS black hole, ADS Schwarzschild black hole, which has a positive space key. And having negative space key in quantum system is a very weird thing. And we wanted to explain this t to the minus 7. And it turns out that if we imagine that small black hole is there to such partially deconfined phase, actually, we can explain n squared times t to the minus 7. And I wrote a paper with Jonathan Maltz. And apparently, Lenny Susskind had the same result independently, but he didn't write a paper. He just gave us credit. But when I tried to explain that story to him, he suddenly said, wait, I know how you drive it. And he stopped me and he gave the derivation. So apparently, he knew it. And this derivation is a bit complicated, so I don't want to explain the detail now. But let me explain why people think positive space heat is natural, and why, if we assume partial deconfinement, negative space heat can naturally be explained. So physically, temperature is energy per degrees of freedom, roughly speaking. Maybe, you know, it's temperature is some positive power of energy per degrees of freedom, but roughly speaking, it's fine. And if all n squared color degrees of freedom are participating with the dynamics, okay, and if energy is E, roughly speaking, temperature is E over n squared. If energy is E prime, roughly speaking, T prime is E prime over n squared. And of course, if E prime is bigger than E, T prime is bigger than T. So this is why positive space T is natural. However, if this M can change as a function of energy, temperature, which is roughly E over M squared, can have a very non-trivial dependence. So depending on the detail of how this M changes with energy, space heat can be positive or negative. And with a slightly better analysis, we can actually show that in four-dimensional super MLs, space heat has to be negative. And energy has to be proportional to t to the minus 7. And this partial deconfinement has a lot more interesting aspect. And I think many people here are interested in quantum entanglement. And I want to convince you that quantum entanglement between color degrees of freedom is very important in the context of holography. And with that derivation, let me assume that this statement, typically ground state of interacting system is highly entangled. I don't have actual calculation, but let me assume this. And the thermal excitation can destroy the entanglement. This is also very hard to demonstrate, but let me assume this is correct. Then, in this picture, okay, this deconfined block is thermally excited. And the confined block is up to one binary correction, the same as zero temperature. Okay? So although it's a finite energy, finite temperature state, large entanglement can survive in this block. Okay, so even though this is a finite temperature system, this confined sector is essentially zero temperature. And in the case of context of gauge gravity duality, okay, so I said that it's natural to expect the confined block with black hole, confined block with exterior, then large entanglement can survive here. So if entanglement between some degrees of freedom is responsible for the emergence of space or emergence of geometry, I think entanglement between color degrees of freedom has to be the key. And these here, I didn't give you any calculation. But if we look at the recent paper by Maradasan and Chi, which is recently popular, getting popular, we can actually give, we can give actual calculation. So they considered coupled version of SYK model. So they prepared the left copy and the right copy of the SYK model and introduced some interaction term, something like this. So this chi L is used for left Hamiltonian, chi R is used for right Hamiltonian, and then there is coupling term. And then when mu is finite, ground state of this coupled Hamiltonian is the thermal field double state of uncoupled theory. And the effective temperature of this thermal field double state is a function of mu. And when mu becomes bigger, the effective temperature becomes bigger. And they claim that the gravity dual of such thermal field double state is eternal traversal wormhole. If you just have thermal field double state of uncoupled theory, this is not the ground state, it's time dependent. But in coupled system, this is actually ground state, and it allows interpretation as eternal traverse wormhole. And they show that there is a first order transition, which resembles the confinement transition in this theory. And they claim that, okay, then at high temperature, because of thermal excitation, entanglement is gone, and wormhole is destroyed. And we can do the same game in gauge theory. Gauge theory is, in some sense, it's much better than, SYK model. You know, if we take a QFT, usually strongly coupled super mu theory, we know what is gravity dual. And as a toy model, let me just again consider gauge Gaussian matrix model. I think the essence is the same in any QFT, okay? And we consider two Gaussian matrix model using X and Y, and to introduce some coupling. So here, I introduce some strange looking stuff. But I used this notation because calculation becomes simple later, but actually I don't show that the calculation, so you can just imagine this is trace x, y. You know, this x minus y squared just becomes x squared plus y squared minus x, y. And the x squared or y squared just shift, change this 1/2 r to b. So essentially interaction term is just x, y. Okay, and in this coupled matrix model, we can again analytically explicitly show that partial deconfinement is taking place. And we can show that in an intermediate energy range, m of the m in SUM in SUN is deconfined, and this m increases as energy becomes larger. We can show that. And I want to claim that this part is black hole, this part is wormhole, based on the fact that thermal excitation would destroy entanglement. But this confined sector has to keep entanglement, though it's finite temperature, finite energy system. And the natural interpretation, which is just the same as SYK, coupled SYK in other strategy, is that ground state is completely confined. So Xij is entangled with Yij. Okay? And all n squared color degrees of freedom in left copy entangles to something. Counterpart in a light copy. So we have a big wormhole, thick wormhole. But then gradually black hole becomes bigger, and when black hole is formed, wormhole is destroyed. And eventually wormhole completely disappears. And apparently this, in this case, we can see that this wormhole is actually corresponding to confined degrees of freedom. And using a partial deconfinement, notion of partial deconfinement, it's almost trivial to see that confinement was actually Bose-Einstein condensation. And this paper appears tonight, and if you like, after my talk, I can give you the file. And firstly, let me list four characteristic features of confinement and Bose-Einstein condensation. There's a striking parallel. Partial deconfinement is, of course, partial confinement. And I show that many colors fall into ground state, which is confined sector. In BEC, many particles fall into ground state, which is Bose-Einstein condensate. And ground state, confined sector, and excited state, deconfined sector, could coexist. And the same is true in Bose-Einstein condensation. If you imagine helium-4, superfluid and normal fluid can coexist. And we show that partial deconfinement or partial confinement happens even at zero coupling limit, like Sandborg or Aharoni and collaborators show. And Einstein showed that Bose-Einstein condensation happens at zero coupling. And as we will see, redundancy coming from gauge symmetry is crucial for the confinement. And in Bose-Einstein condensation, if we have identical boson, there's a permutation symmetry. Permutation symmetry is analogous to gauge symmetry. Redundancy due to permutation symmetry or equivalently wave function has to be symmetric is the key to the Bose-Einstein condensation. And the quote-unquote kinematical confinement or deconfinement in the sense of, you know, free energy or entropy jumps from order one to some positive power n can happen even in ON vector model. And the vector model has striking parallel to BEC. So let me first use a vector model as an example. The same argument holds for Yamils. So we have n, so imagine ON vector model on d-dimensional sphere, and we impose gauge singlet constraint. So we have n different colors. And among n colors, m of them can be deconfined, and we can draw this kind of curve by solving this model. And actually, this model has been solved by Sheehan and Steve Schenker, and we can straightforwardly reinterpret their result. And then we can show that m over n is T over critical temperature to V, and the critical temperature is n to the 1 over D. And energy and entropy is explained by SUM deconfinement. And if we consider non-interacting atoms in harmonic potential in D dimension. Okay, so we have n particles. So x coordinate is described by x1 to xn, y coordinate is described by y1 to yn, and so on. And we have a constraint coming from permutation. So wave function has to be symmetric, or in other words, we have to impose Sn permutation invariance. Wave function which are related by Sn permutation are the same state. So, you know, it's like Sn vector quantum mechanics. So we are comparing ON vector model, QFT, and Sn vector quantum mechanics. Sorry, I forgot quantum. And we can see how many of n particles are excited, how many of the particles are not in ground state. And we have exact same expression. And the critical temperature scaled with n in the same manner. And the only difference is that instead of ON gauge symmetry, we used Sn permutation symmetry. And we can understand the mechanism even more precisely by looking at the partial function. So this is a partial function. So in order to impose this G, in the case of Bose-Einstein condensation, this is Sn permutation. In the gauge theory, it will become Sn or Sun or On. Okay? And we take a sum with respect to group element G. Then this works as a projection, and we get the singlet constraint. And as I will show in the next slide, if in the case of a BC, all n particles, you know, we can use such Fock basis to describe to describe the state. Okay, trace is a sum with respect to such n particle state, and those n vectors specify the state. And when all particles are in the same state, we see enhancement factor n factorial. And if all of them are in different state, we don't have anything. Because you know, this, if all vectors are the same, permutation doesn't change the state. So any permutation can contribute to the partial fraction, which leads to n factorial. But if all states are different, only g equals to 1 can give a non-zero inner product. And more explicitly, this is expression in the case of n identical bosons. So we use this basis here, okay, and we take some with respect to all the excitation mode from you know, first to nth bosons, and we take some with respect to SNL. And the exponential minus beta h, you know, just trivially pick up the energy of each particle, okay? And this g hat just permute these indices. And if all vectors are the same, any g give non-zero inner product. If all of them are different, only g equals to 1, give non-zero inner product. That's the reason ground state really contribute a lot more than excited state. And that's how Bose-Einstein condensation takes place. Okay, so in the ground state, because all n particles are in the same state, we have a big enhancement factor. While in excited modes, because generically all states are in different state, we don't get any enhancement. And in the case of confinement, what is happening is in ground state, because all n colors are in the same state, we have enhancement factor. But this n factorial was just a you know, quote unquote volume of SN permutation group. And instead, we get the volume of ON or SUN. And in the excited, in the deconfined phase, because all n colors are in different state, we don't get any enhancement. And apparently, this argument works for Yamil as well. And this gives a clear reason why this bigger symmetry is favored compared to non-symmetry situation. Because in the latter, we have larger enhancement factor coming from volume of SU n minus n. And we can make this argument more precise using a standard characterization of Bose-Einstein condensation based on so-called off-diagonal long-range order, and the standard characterization of confinement-confinement transition based on Plaque. And we can, by using this basis, we can write density matrix of n in a particle. And by tracing out all but one particle, we can get reduced density matrix for first particle. And this n is just a normalization factor. And you know, such calculation is defined even with interaction, though calculation becomes complicated. And according to Onsager and Penrose, that order n, so if we do spectral decomposition, in a free limit, we have that order n quantity, order n coefficient times ground state, ground state k times ground state bra, plus some excited mode appear. And even with the interaction, if some ground state, quote unquote ground state, give order one, order n coefficient, this is a signature of BEC. And this definition can hold even with interaction. This is proposed by Onsager and Penrose in 1950s. And later CNEM realized that because this is just a ground state, if we take a 2-point function, if we have look at the matrix element in a coordinate basis of the first particle, okay, and then we have a phi of y and phi of x star. And in ground state, they are kind of constant everywhere. And excited mode just decays. And so in a long distance, this part becomes dominant. And we find a non-vanishing long distance order. And this is off-diagonal in a coordinate basis. So this is called off-diagonal long-range order. And this is the reason for the name. And I claim that this constant offset of a distribution of a Plaque loop phase is long distance, off-diagonal long-range order. And Intuitively, it's rather easy to see. Actually, so first I give first half of the derivation, which is convincing enough, I hope. And the second part is very involved, so I want to skip, okay? And the first part, again, we start with this expression of partition function. And the point here is this G is a Polyakov loop. I think many people are tired now. So if you're interested, I can explain why this is a Polyakov later. But please just accept the fact that this G is actually Polyakov. Okay? And in the case of BEC, in order to see the distribution of phase, so we have to see, we have to choose G, which leaves typical state invariant. And so we can find what would be the typical state based on some dynamic, based on standard textbook calculation of BEC. And then we should find element of the permutation group which leaves that state invariant. And by M0, I would mean number of the particles whose state is coincide with ground state. Or for generic vector n, we count from n1 to nn, how many of them take this specific value. Okay, this mn means number of particles in the state specified this vector. Okay, and we should find this smn, which we can do based on textbook calculation. And then we take an element of G, which is the element of this subgroup of Sn, okay, and see the eigenvalue distribution. And the only important part here is ground state. And M0, when BEC is formed, it increases with n. It's of order n. And typically, all other excited modes are much smaller than n. And we focus on this part. And if S of M0 becomes big, long cyclic permutation becomes dominant. So any element of a permutation group can be written as a product of a cyclic permutation. But if permutation group becomes big, typical cyclic permutation becomes very long. And if the length of a cyclic permutation k is k, then eigenvalue is k through root of 1. And this k increases with n and goes to infinity. So phase coming from S permutation, which is acting on ground state, just give this constant offset. And with more complicated calculation, we can actually show that excited modes are not really contributing to this constant offset. So this constant offset, which we use to characterize the size of a confined sector, was actually the same as off-diagonal long-range order. And the same argument holds for gauge theory as well. So in that sense, and this characterization works even at a strong coupling. So what we have to assume is that a permutation invariance survives in confinement sector. As long as that is true, this characterization holds even at a strong coupling. So I claim this is a precise formulation of a partial confinement. And so I have 5 minutes, so let's go to summary, discussion, and speculation. Speculation is the most interesting part of the talk, typically. So first summary. So I want to convince, I hope I could convince that this nice phase diagram exists. And the confinement transition consists of two phase transitions. And there is a symmetry breaking and the restoration associated with that. So already from the point of QCD, I think looking at the phase transition in this symmetry principle is very interesting. And I think this is okay even for SU3, large volume. And then if that's true in colliders like LSC or RIC, breaking of restoration, breaking and restoration of gauge symmetry has to be happening. So if we can find the experimental signature, then it could be fun. And I want to convince you that this is how space appears. Here, the resolution isn't really good, and I just separate the matrix to two blocks and say the black hole corresponds to this block, this confined sector corresponds to exterior. But my fantasy is maybe you can embed the tensor network here. If you can do that, that's very interesting, I think. And I have three more slides. And I'm thinking maybe Banks, Fischer, Schenker, Saskin, like picture, good old picture from the 90s, is related to standard ADS-CFT in Maradasena's picture. So this is QFT. This is gravity. So we, in a 4D equals 4, we have six scalar fields, and I use this direction to denote the scalar field, and this direction is a three-dimensional space. And if we act local operator to completely confined state, some smaller energy is added locally. So some small block has to be deconfined, and it should be localized along three-dimensional space. And if value of scalar is big, that would mean, from a three-dimensional QFT point of view, a lot of energy is needed in order to excite X to large value. So energy density is big, so it has to be very well localized around three-dimensional space. Okay, and the large X is boundary. And if, so this is a purely speculation, but if this move to smaller X, which is deep in the bulk, then X becomes smaller, that would mean energy density go down. But if energy is conserved, it has to spread to three-dimensional space. And it looks kind of, in the gravity side, if you think this size doesn't change, but the space is shrinking, or in this picture, space doesn't change, but this excited block is expanding, they look kind of similar. So I think maybe this kind of rather naive picture is a good starting point to understand how matrices or colors are related to emergence of space. And this is very much related to BFSS picture. And it looks like that if we have, for example, if we imagine a scattering of two gravitons, so we insert two energy momentum tensor, and it create a graviton, and they propagate in the bulk and interact, and then scatter. But it would look like two small deconfined block moving in the sea of colors. Or it looks like a normal fluid part of helium moving in a superfluid and scatter around. And here we use the partial deconfinement picture. But if we just replace it with Higgs thing, it looks very much like good old BFSS picture. And there, philosophy was everything from matrix. But if we identify color and the qubit, maybe their picture just reduces to it from qubit. And so then it would allow a better understanding of emergent geometry. This is my final slide. Thank you very much.
Some time for questions, if you have any. So, what are condensed? Like you mentioned that there is an analogy with EECs and let's say SYK, what would be?
That's a very good question. And the short answer is, I don't know. But what is happening is probably there are n fermions. And the naive guess is part of them can be excited, and part of them are in ground state. But in a free limit, of course, we can do such calculation. But the SYK is very strongly coupled, so I haven't succeeded. But my naive guess is...
First, they need to form bosons. First, they need to form some bosons.
This is the Bose-Einstein condensation picture. But so here I say the Bose-Einstein condensation, but in the weak coupling limit, the only important thing is everything goes to ground state. And of course, in the case of a fermion, you have only two states. But you would be able to imagine that even in the case of a fermion, such condensation, it's different from Bose-Einstein condensation there. But the fact that many of them go to ground state, that can be happening. But if I could understand what is happening with SYCA model, I could write a paper with that. But then I couldn't understand, but by mapping it to boson problem, I could get a nice picture. So that's the reason I wrote a paper with that.
You would expect that the permutation invariance would play the important part there? Or?
Could be. But I don't have explicit calculation, so I don't claim much.
Any more questions? I can probably ask one. Do you have any thing to say about the relative size of M and N? Like, depending on what kind of model you're looking at, can we say something about M by N ratio and so on?
So M over N can change from 0 to 1.
Yes.
And in a simple matrix model, we can actually do Monte Carlo simulation and can actually see that M over N almost continuously can change from 0 to 1. We can find all states. We can explicitly find the partially confined configuration in lattice data.
Okay, let's thank Masanori.